Ladies and gentlemen, it started. It started already on Thanksgiving, maybe a little before that. I'm driving down the street and the signs are there and the lights are out. And little white lights are all trickled through downtown Fayetteville. And the traffic starts plugging up that evening. Had occasion to, Thursday evening after Thanksgiving, to, on the way home from the nephew's place for dinner and stopped in at Walmart, and it was a little about 5:30, and the sign was that Black Friday started at 6 p.m. on Thursday, and they had areas that were taped or roped off in the store, and we just had gone there to get two small items as long as they were going to be open. I thought they'd be open until 6. I didn't know they'd be open later, and went in there, and people were lined up, and they were ready to go. They were ready to. They had the hot deals flyer in their hand. The doors were never locked, but they had all of these people gathered up, and we picked our few items and left. But people were in great anticipation as it got closer and closer to 6 p.m. The next day, as we or that night, as we drive home, there's a truck, and the truck had a a bucket truck with a trailer behind it, and it said, so-and-so family ornaments installed, call this number. So people are putting their ornaments on houses and commercial buildings, and they're lighting them up and putting out their decorations. It's quite a commercial opportunity. And then I went to a faculty meeting at my school, and they said, when shall we have the Christmas party? Well, I really had no opinion as to when they were going to have the Christmas party, because it didn't matter to me. But they were all concerned and got up to scheduling all right. And so they picked a date for the Christmas party and where they were going to have that located. And then I get the email that says, all the faculty members are invited to participate in Secret Santa. So let us know what you'd like and, you know, what you have, and you'll be generically drawing names, and I don't really know too much about Secret Santa, except that if you want to opt out, please send this email here. Thank you for the invite. Please, you know, allow me to opt out, and responded. And then yesterday, a student, whom I don't have never had, don't even know the name, hands me what appears to be a Christmas card in a red envelope. Doesn't say Christmas on the inside. It says, you got your claws on, you know, and it was like a Santa Claus type spelling. And I'm thinking, you know, this is it. I'm hearing the music in the stores. And I'm seeing this, and it's surrounding us all. You can't get away from it. It's there. And people seem to be in a pleasant and an upbeat mood about all of this. So I thought, well, you know, it's really that time of year where we should examine what we think, why do we think it, what do we believe, why do we believe it, and is there proof for any of it? And so I went to UCG.org, and I thought, well, the best place that I probably could go is to start out is go to the Teen Bible Study Guide. That ought to bring it down to my level, right? You know, just you know, make it easy. And so I downloaded it. It says reading time, 6 minutes. Well, and to make it easy for a teen, I ought to be able to understand that too. And so they had a few questions in here that said, you know, if you were going to conduct a teen Bible study, you might want to answer this question. If the Bible is the origin of Christmas, where is it mentioned in the Bible? Where is there an account of any of the original apostles observing Christmas? If we're to celebrate Christ's birth, how do we know his birthday? Does the Bible state December 25th is the date Christmas was born? What time of year did Christ's birth actually take place? And the Christmas tree is a common sight of Christmas. Can you think of anything that it teaches us about Christ? Question 6. And we've always been told there were 3 wise men, but how many wise men are mentioned in the Bible? Point 7. When did they see Jesus, the wise men? And was it on the day he was born? Point 8. If we're honoring Christ, why do those who observe Christmas give presents to everyone except Christ? And why did the wise men give gifts to Jesus? Question 9. What does kissing under the mistletoe have to do with Christ's birth? Why is it one of the customs engaged in during the Christmas season? And question 10. If Christmas is about Christ, who's Santa Claus? For what reason are children taught to be good year-round? Question 11. What does the Yule log stand for? Is this something that they use to keep the baby Jesus warm in the manger? And question 12, the last question here. What lessons about God's plan of salvation do we learn from keeping Christmas traditions and customs? Well, of course, you can wander into pretty deep with those questions, and each one of those is a takeoff, and you can spend considerable time. So I thought, well, that's a lot of material. So on UCJ.org, I just typed in the word Christmas. And then I looked at the response to how many mentions there are on the website. And then I sat down and I looked again. There are 29,000 mentions of Christmas on the UCG.org website. And I took a big breath and I said, well, I clearly can't cover this all in 25 minutes. So how are we really going to, because there's so many aspects to this subject. And so what I want to do is I want to give us some overall guidance on how we can dig into this subject. And I'm going to go over, what is it, 10, about 10 or 12 different articles that show up as to each one of them delving into something and give us a little peek, like through the keyhole, peek at this whole subject of what does the Bible say about Christmas and the different types of subjects that Christmas brings up. I do want to turn to Deuteronomy 12 and verse 29. In Deuteronomy 12, 29, and we're going to go through verse 32. And when we're completed with the introduction of these 10 or 12 articles, then it's my turn to ask you questions. So we'll do some of that here in a few minutes. In Deuteronomy 12, verse 29, when the Lord your God cuts you off from before you the nations which you go to dispossess, and you displace them and dwell in their land, take heed to yourself that you're not ensnared to follow them after they are destroyed from before you, and that you do not inquire after their gods, saying, how did these nations serve their gods? I also will do likewise. You shall not worship the Lord your God in that way, for every abomination to the Lord which he hates, they have done to their gods. Whatever I command you, be careful to observe it. You shall not add to it nor take away from it. Well, that's pretty bold, and it was told to the children of Israel before or as they're going into the promised land. They were given instructions. When you see the way people are doing things, don't do what they do, because it doesn't follow God. And so we're told, if we see them and doing something that we shouldn't, then don't do it. Let's look then what the Apostle Paul wrote in 2 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians 6. In 2 Corinthians 6, starting in verse 14, do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness? And what communion has light with darkness? And what accord is Christ with Belial? Or what part has a believer with an unbeliever? And what agreement has the temple of God with idols? For you are the temple of the living God. As God has said, I will dwell in them and walk among them. I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Therefore, come out from among them and be separate, says the Lord. Do not touch what is unclean, and I will receive you. I will be a father to you, and you shall be my sons and daughters, says the Lord Almighty. Now, we're looking at here at what? Over 1,000 years apart between these statements. One is in Deuteronomy and the other is in 2 Corinthians. And it's consistent. The Bible is consistent. Don't get involved in things that draw you away from God. And so this particular in the teens Bible study is how that's how it started, and you're certainly able to download that by just going to ucg.org. So first off, the first part of the lesson is be careful. Don't get drawn away. Now, we just heard the sermon on counterfeit Christianity, and this seems to be a time of year where people get drawn away to things that mimic Christianity. It's the one that we're careful. There's one, and I'm not going to go through all of it, but there's one entitled Christmas, the Untold Story, that I printed out from the UCG website. It's 18-minute read, has a number of pages, but the things that people often don't talk about when they talk about Christmas. What about the background of December 25th? What else was it used for? And so forth. The ancient pagan origins of Christmas and Christmas customs. And we're looking at the 2nd century BC, where the Greeks practiced rites to honor their god Dionysius, also called Bacchus. And the Latin name for the celebration is Bacchanalia. And of course, it went from Greece to Rome, the center of the Roman Empire. And at that time, about December 21st, the ancient Greeks celebrated what we know as now as, or what the Romans called Bacchanalia, or festivals in honor of Bacchus, the god of wine. In these festivities, people give themselves up to songs, dances, and other revels, which frequently pass the limits of decency and order. And in fact, there were nocturnal orgies that associated with the festival. The Roman Senate suppressed the observance in 186 BC. It was so popular, it was hard even for the Roman Senate to say, you probably shouldn't even do this. Even they recognized that it was problematic. The Roman Empire, of course, became a melting pot of many different religions. And even in that time, businesses closed for this particular celebration. Even though, unless, of course, you were selling food and items that you needed for the celebration. This is before the time of Christ. And they were doing this type of celebration. And then we get to the modern customs. Of course, Santa Claus is an American pronunciation of the Dutch version of Saint Nicholas by the early Dutch colonists that brought it to America. In fact, the early Dutch colonists settled in what they called New Amsterdam. The British took it over and renamed it New York. So we have the early celebration, Christmas celebration, in what is now New York. Of course, Christmas in America was not widely celebrated or even legal in many places until somewhere in the 1800s, depending on where it was, because it was known to have that difficult or pagan background. But how do these pagan customs become part of Christianity? Well, it's a pretty strong tradition. If you go back to Bacchanalia or Saturnalia, and if you go to the January or New Year's, Brumalia, Matronalia, all of these pagan customs about gifts being carried, so forth, New Year's Day presents, and then banquets, and so forth. These are all seem to be pre-Christian celebrations. So when Pope Gregory in the late 500s sent a missionary to convert the Anglo-Saxons in England, he said that they should do their best to accommodate the local heathen rites with what they perceived to be Christian rites. That way the people would be more accustomed to that, and they would more readily accept Catholicism. So the Pope advised St. Augustine to allow his converts to kill and eat a great number of oxen, and do it then and say it in the glory of God instead of in the glory of their other gods. In other words, morph them over to a new kind of celebration. When the early Americans came up to Massachusetts in particular, you've heard of the Pilgrims, and their colony in Plymouth Rock or Plymouth, Massachusetts, they refused to celebrate Christmas because they knew it was a pagan. In fact, they made a point of making sure they could work on Christmas just to show that they weren't celebrating that particular day. On June 3rd of 1647, the Parliament in England established punishments for observing Christmas and other such holidays, and that was reaffirmed then 5 years later by Parliament in England. And of course, England went through a number of changes from monarchy to Oliver Cromwell, the Lord Protector, and then back to the monarchy. So when the monarchy was abolished for 20 years, they didn't have Christmas. Then when they restored the monarchy, came back Christmas again, back in the late 1600s, when the colonies were well on their way being done, developed in America. So it was a mixed practice. Early on, they would mix elements of Christianity with elements of the area or local pagan rituals. Interesting article about entitled "The Biblical Evidence Shows Jesus Christ Wasn't Born on December 25th. Well, surprise, surprise. Now, had you told me this when I was a teenager, I'd have been puzzled to say, why did anybody even question it? Well, of course, that's just the way it is. It's always been that way. That's the Jesus' birthday celebration. What are you, some kind of pagan? Aren't you going to celebrate Christ's birth? I mean, who are you, you know? Scum of the earth that would think that it's that Christ, I mean, who just wouldn't do it? I mean, it was just unthinkable, culturally unacceptable. And yet this little three-minute article steps through, and it's really quite simple, that it makes it a problematic for even the simplest of read to understand that December 25th is really not the right time by biblical evidence. And Luke 2, verses 7 and 8, we know the shepherds were in the fields watching their flocks at the time of Jesus' birth. But the shepherds are never having their flocks in the field in December. According to Celebrations, a complete book of American holidays, the verse in Luke suggests that Jesus may have been born in summer or early fall. Since December is cold and rainy in Judea, it's likely the shepherds would have sought shelter for their flocks at night, not out on the open pastures. The Interpreter's one-volume commentary said that this passage in Luke argues against the birth of Christ occurring on December 25th because mother would not have permitted the shepherds to be out in the fields at night. Now, I've been out in the fields at night. I've been backpacking up in the wilderness and going in, and that was in the summer. I haven't done so in the winter. Although I will say in college, we did have people that went camping in the winter in Minnesota. These are the same people that played with fluorescent orange golf balls in the winter. You know, something's not right there. There was also another indication in the Bible that December 25th couldn't be the date because Jesus' parents came to Bethlehem to register in a Roman census, and that's in Luke 2, verses 1 through 4. Well, if this occurs, such censuses weren't taken when the temperature would drop below freezing. That would be problematic. So if you want to bring people together, you would likely bring them when they're going to come together anyway. And they would normally come together anyway during the fall feast days of Feast of Tabernacles. So that's a normal time when people would go and gather in their with their greater families. Another little hint, of course, was Christ never, we don't have any evidence he celebrated his own birthday. Now, there's some pictures that show that I celebrated my birthday when I was 4, 5, and 6 years old. There isn't a lot of evidence other than that, but there are pictures that I can see. But we don't have any evidence that Christ celebrated his birthday. So does the Bible indicate when he was born, when Christ was born? Well, we have clues in the Bible. We know that Elizabeth, the mother of John the Baptist, was in her sixth month of pregnancy when Christ was conceived. So if we jockey around with the calendar a little bit, and we know the length of gestation or how long it takes babies, and we know that John's father was Zacharias, was a priest serving in the temple at that time, historical calculations put this service at the middle of June, meaning June 13th through 19th in that particular year. And it was that time of Zacharias' temple service. Well, that then that he was gone, and then he traveled home, and then John the Baptist was conceived. So you can take and start adding and so forth, and you can calculate that even when John the Baptist was 6 months in utero, 6 months along, and you add 9 months to that, there's no way you're going to come up with December 25th under the most stretching of circumstances. So biblical evidence shows Christ wasn't born on December 25th. There's another article, another short read, says, well, when was Christ born? And of course, it's a reiteration of that earlier article and shows the challenges and puts some links as to find out when Christ was born, which is an interesting little Bible study if you want to follow that one along. It was 11 years ago, Scott. 11 years ago last week it was published. Scott Ashley wrote an interesting article called The Top 10 Reasons Why I Don't Celebrate Christmas. Well, you know, I think the late night TV guys all say the top 10 this or the top 10 that. Well, we have the top 10 reasons why I don't celebrate Christmas, which would be interesting. and so, number one, he says, Christmas is driven by commercialism. Well, it doesn't take any more convincing for me just to look around and say, yep, that's so. Number two, Christmas is nowhere mentioned in the Bible. Well, that's true. You don't have Christmas mentioned in the Bible. Number three, Jesus wasn't born on or near December 25th. Well, he's got me there. That's certainly there. Number four, Christmas holiday is largely a recycled pagan celebration. Yep, we got documentation of that. Number five, God condemns using pagan customs to worship him. Well, we've already read those verses in Deuteronomy and in Corinthians and in other places they are in the Bible. His sixth reason, Christmas is worshiping God in vain. Ooh, so we're pretending to worship God, but not really doing what God says. So that would be point six. Point seven, you can't put Christ back into something he was never in the first place. Ouch, that has to hurt for those that say we'll just put Christ back into Christmas. Now, his point eight, the Bible nowhere tells us to observe a holiday celebrating Christ's birth, but it does give instructions on how to commemorate his death. So where there are sharp and clear instructions, we have those. If there were instructions to celebrate his birth, there would have been something specific. Point nine, Christmas obscures God's plan for mankind. It's a counterfeit. It distracts us. It pulls us away from the truths of God, from the plan of God, and from the path to the kingdom of God. And his point ten, and I'm sure you've used this with your kids, I'd rather celebrate the holy days that Jesus Christ and the apostle observed. And more than one church kid has said, well, okay, you can keep your one day or one night of Christmas, but I have 8 days where I'm going someplace and you're not. And I get stuff every day and enjoy that every day. And then the other kids get somewhat jealous and say, what can we do to get on the deal? Until they take that information home. It gets a little exciting. So, Mr. Ashley, good article there. And then from time to time, it'll slip out, you know, well, so you don't keep Christmas? Who are you? You don't. What's the deal with that? And the Good News Magazine, this is what, 12 years ago. Why? On December 2nd, 12 years ago. Why do some Christians not celebrate Christmas? And the reasons that some people give for kicking the Christmas habit. And it'll go through, and it goes through and lists a number of what people are, how they're responding, what they're saying about to do it, and what their family did and how they did it. And it's interesting, it brought to mind when I became of age, and I'm 20 years old, and I'm going to explain to my parents that I'm really not going to keep Christmas. And they were somewhat hostile to the thought that I wouldn't be keeping Christmas that year. And I said, well, I said, I'm really don't know how to explain this other than to say that I read Jeremiah 10, and I can't see anything else around it. And if you're going to put up a Christmas tree, I'm really uncomfortable with that. I'd rather do what God says. Oh, boy, they were just upset as can be. But, you know, apparently they read Jeremiah 10 because they never saw a Christmas tree in their house after that. They weren't happy about it. They still kept Christmas there. It wasn't a Christmas tree up. and they weren't too pleased about that. My brother was ahead of me slightly in church and came into church. So I turned to him and said, okay, now, what do you do? I mean, what about Grandma? Grandma Love, we always go there. And of course, we're in college. We're all far away. And so we're not home at the time. But I said, what are you going to do about Grandma? Because everybody has family, you know, and that's a big expense. Her whole life is family and gathering together and such. And how are you going to explain that, you know? And he said, well, here's what I do. And some of you know my brother. He said, I write her a long letter just before Christmas, about 3 or 4 pages. He said, by the time she gets through with the long letter of everything going on, she's not too worried about me not being there for Christmas because she's got the scoop on everything. I like that idea. It was a good idea. I adopted that idea. So Grandma always gets a long letter prior to that. And then she was happy. She was emotionally satisfied. That took care of things. Gerald Ost wrote the article, Why Some Christians Don't Keep Christmas, and includes in it why so many people do observe it. And of course, we know some of the background of that, that Christmas doesn't really honor Christ. In fact, it dishonors Christ. There's more depth to it in an article called Paganism and Christianity. Ooh, can we go down the line? It's not just Christmas trees. What about those ornaments on the trees? And each of those have certain meanings. And we're told, you know, don't work. Look at the astrological signs. Well, what do you see on Christmas trees? Orbs and stars and all these little astrological things that they put for ornaments there. So it's really, in other words, including them onto the Christmas tree is really bringing things in that are really deeply involved in more pagan worship. And then there's a 12-minute read here by Mr. Ost on Christmas before Christ. Now, if you want to really dig into something, you know, well, if people say put Christ back into Christmas, well, there was a lot of Christmas going on before Christ came around. In fact, a long time before that. And so that people had a choice. Way back then, they could either celebrate the holy days that are listed in the Bible, or they could celebrate the pagan days. If we were back then, which one would we do? Would we follow the scriptures, or would we do the local pagan traditions? And of course, we say, well, if we lived back then, we wouldn't have done it, right? Well, a lot of people did. Then there's an examination of the nativity. And this one is entitled The Real Nativity Story. In other words, all the things that don't add up about the common myth of Christmas and the nativity, you know, the manger scene and so forth. And we, you know, Christmas born on Christmas Day in a stable in Bethlehem, and the shepherds and the wise men looking on, the three wise men and so forth. Well, there's some problems with that standard theme because it has become mythology, because none of it adds up and you can't find it. And so you can find the analysis of each item as to, well, what's wrong with this picture? Well, for one, the wise men didn't show up. It could have been a year. It could have been 2 years later. They came from the east. You travel by donkey and camel and horse. It's going to take a while. 1 foot in front of the other. And if you're going to travel 500 miles, and you do how many miles a day? And who's on the path? Well, there are thieves and robbers and who knows what not. And they were bringing valuable gifts. Well, that means they weren't traveling lightly. They had to have an entourage with them. They weren't even sure where they were going. If we read the biblical examples or the biblical discussion, we find that they inquired, where is this person, you know, of the king? I mean, after all, he would know. And the king, of course, Herod certainly wanted to know where that was and wound up killing 2 years worth of little babies. So that indicates that it was sometime after the birth that the wise men from the east show up. We assume, or a lot of people assume, not we, but a lot of people assume that there were three wise men because there were three gifts. It doesn't say. We're not even exactly, I don't think, sure what the word wise men mean. I know I've heard some speculation, and I have to be careful not to go off on a rabbit trail, that these could have been from the lost tribes of Israel. You know, people, you know, elsewhere that were coming to honor that. And so, and I find that some compelling thinking and reasoning that goes there, that they were honoring who they knew the Messiah to be coming. There's a 5-minute article, Lessons No One Taught Me About Christmas in the Bible. Anybody ever lie to you about Christmas? No. You grew up in America, right? And everybody seemed to have been told the stories. How'd you feel when you found out that there was no real Santa Claus? He couldn't fit down the chimney hole. And the milk and cookies were not consumed by Santa. Reindeer can't fly. There's a, you know, there's a lot of those things. And all of a sudden, things just, you know, that you realize that you've been learning mythology. And, of course, we all go along with the mythology when we're young because it's a cultural thing, and we feel good. We feel good about it. But it takes a while to unlearn some of that. I mean, I know the songs that you probably know the songs that. In fact, in high school, in Latin class, we were singing them in Latin. I'm singing some of these in Latin, and it's really silly. And that was a long time ago. You know, that's a gulp. I would have never thought that stayed with, but it does. And so we all can bop along with the tunes. Another long read was Christ Born on Christmas Day, was another analysis about the apostles. Did they keep Christmas? If not, why not? And how it's been paganism relabeled. Hang on. And then, of course, there's the article about the connection between the tree mentioned in Jeremiah 10 and the Christmas tree. And if nothing else, I would encourage you to take a look at this one. It's 4 years ago. It's a 7-minute read. In fact, I'll put all of these on the information table. So that you have these tools at the ready. And Mr. Jackson, if you have a chance, could you hand out the one that looks like this? Mr. Irvin, yeah. The one that looks like this. This is really basically the articles that I've gone over, and you have a summary of them there that shows the titles of them so that it gives you the ammunition you need at this time of year, you know, in order to be able to quickly and readily respond with reality instead of with fiction. I know the article about the tree mentioned in Jeremiah 10, the Christmas tree and so forth. It dug it right in. It was the issue that I had to first face when I was 20 years old, and I'm not 20 anymore. But it explained it very well. So you have a copy here of these are the ones that I've gone over today. I maybe have gotten added a couple more. And on my copy, I put down how many minutes it took to read each one. 3, 14, 5, blah, 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 and it goes up to like 99 minutes worth here if you go through it. On the other hand, that's 99 minutes. How many hours, how many minutes a week do we have? We have 168 hours. What is that in a week? So 99 minutes is a little over an hour and a half out of 168. So that's it. So sometime it would be good to maybe review some of this during this season so that you're equipped and ready to answer anyone who has a question of you. Now, I do have, Mr. Jackson, if you could hand out the questions at this time. I have a few questions that I'd like us to approach to answer in the interactive portion. And those questions are, how do you respond when you're invited to a Christmas party, whether it's at work or at school? Number two, how do you respond when someone says to you, Merry Christmas? Number three, how do you respond when an acquaintance asks, have you started or finished your Christmas shopping yet? Number four, how do you respond when someone hands you a Christmas gift? Number five, how do you respond when a coworker asks if you will be involved in a secret Santa gift exchange? Or number six, what do you do when a neighbor child comes to you and says, your son Johnny says there's no Santa Claus? Tell me, is there? Or number seven, how do you respond if somebody actually just asks you, why don't you keep Christmas? So what I'd like to do is to number 1 through 5 and then gather all the 1s together, 2s together, 3s together, and 4s together, if you would. That way we won't be, we'll mix it up with people that we may not necessarily know well. So if we could do that, and I can get you to count off with numbers and just say your number out loud, if you could do number 1. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I presume most of us are pretty well close to ready. On the literature table, we've got holidays or holy days, which does it matter which days we observe? That's a handy booklet in case you don't have one at home. You want to be sure to get one so that you have that for your ready reference. So, how do you respond when you're invited to a Christmas party at work or at school? Now, if you're one of those that's speaking in the group, Kelly has a microphone. You want to hold it. Just don't put your lips on it, but, you know, hold it really, really close. So it's been pre-licked. Okay. But you do need to be close in order to the wireless mic to pick it up. So how do you respond when you're invited to a Christmas party? Any response? Or does it ever never happen?
Well, I just turn them down, and if they ask further, then I give the explanation. But if they don't inquire, I don't.
You don't feed them more than what they ever are hungry for?
Yeah.
Any other responses? How do you respond when you're invited to a Christmas party?
I just say I have other plans already. Thank you.
Which is certainly true. I can think of a lot of other things I'd rather be doing about that time. Any other responses? Well, number 2, how do you respond when somebody says to you, Merry Christmas? Do you have a response? Okay, Mr. Bah Humbug here, go ahead.
I just say, have a good day. Leave it at that. I don't say you too. I have been known to do that.
Didn't you used to work for Walmart?
Oh, I did.
Didn't they say, have a good day? Don't you say that after you go there? Oh, I don't know. Good training. It's good training.
Just have a good day.
And it works. Yeah, and it works. Fills the blank space.
Unless they ask more questions, then I'll answer.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anybody else? How do you respond when someone says to you, Merry Christmas?
It's one thing my husband taught me. He would say, when somebody wishes him a Merry Christmas, like at the stores, he would say thank you, and that's what I do now.
Just thank them. They're trying to be cordial and nice. They perhaps don't mean anything deep by it. It's just a cultural greeting. Any other comments on how to respond to the greeting?
If I can get away without them noticing, I'll just ignore it.
Cold-hearted fish. Yeah, it's best. Yeah, if you can pretend not to hear, that's always nice. Yeah. So how do you respond when an acquaintance asks, have you started or finished your Christmas shopping yet? What do you say? Have you finished it or started it?
I say no. Because it'll never happen anyway.
Yes.
My favorite line is to say, yes, I stopped in 1980.
Well, that'll stop them up quick. Or as Mike says, you can say either yes or no to that question and then move on.
Well, I eat lunch every day with a lady at work, and she asked me if I'd finished my Christmas shopping, and I knew since I'm with her so much, I needed to tell her that I don't keep Christmas or I'll end up with a Christmas gift or something. So I did tell her. I said, well, I don't keep Christmas. And she looked a little odd. She said, oh, that's okay, you know. But then she said, well, I keep it because I want to keep Christ's birthday. And I didn't say anything back. She didn't ask me any questions or anything. So that was that.
She probably convinced you're an utter pagan now.
I was with Roy the other day, and somebody asked him that, and he just said, yes, all we're ever going to do. So that was, I guess, basically the same thing he was saying before.
Any other response? Mr. Fitz?
Thanks for reminding me. I got to go take my medicine.
That's probably the... I'm going to have to remember that one. Although I don't take medicine, that's probably a good response. They're probably not going to follow up with anything on that one. He's wearing a halo today.
Oh, what do you take?
I'll just go down the list. So, how do you respond when someone hands you a Christmas gift? I'm sure it happens from time to time. Hand you a card, hand you a gift, something, somewhere.
You can just say thank you, you know, appreciate your gesture, and just explain that you don't keep Christmas, but you could accept it as a friendship gift.
Trying not to offend. It's so easy to offend people when they have an emotional investment in the season in particular. So if there's a way to smoothly not offend them, well, good luck. You know, everybody is a little different. Anybody else have a response on how you respond if someone hands you a Christmas gift? I mean, it happens to me as a teacher. I mean, the students will slip something.
I've been wanting that all year.
Well, I've had two different responses because I used to clean for a retired lieutenant colonel, and he gave me a gift at the end of the year. It was Christmas gift, and I said, "Well, I don't observe Christmas," so he just tore it out of all the packaging, and he said, "It's not. It's an something like it's an end of the year bonus," and so I took it and said, "Thank you." And then I helped take care of a man in Bella Vista, and his wife knew I didn't observe Christmas, and so she got me a Christmas present. And she insisted I was going to take it and that it was going to be a Christmas present. And so I refused to take it. So she got very irritated with me. I had been working there with him for a long time, I mean months, and so she knew. But she was determined I was going to take it, and it was going to be a Christmas present. And she told me the proper response is thank you. And so I did not take it, and I was glad that I didn't take it. And I just felt like it would have hurt my conscience if I had. So I've had two different experiences with it. If she would have torn it up, you know, if she just said this is not a Christmas present, I would have just said thank you, and I would have taken it.
But the cram downs are kind of hard.
Mm-hmm. So... That's the way she responded about a lot of things, and so that's why, I guess.
Anybody else?
No. In my family, the kids still do their thing on Christmas. They buy the gifts, and they're going to get me something. And what I've done to them, I says, well, the gift would be fine. I would love to if you'd give it to me on another day. And that worked out, because then they can give it to me any time they want to. They don't have to. I said, I can receive gifts all year long if you would like.
So you're asking for respect?
Yes.
Okay.
And I always have to get them something. And I generally, you know, and I'll buy them, you know, things through the years, you know, socks or something. Paul runs out of socks. He wears them out. And I snatch them out of the laundry when he isn't looking. You know, and you want to buy them all the same type of sock.
Oh, you do like I do then, yeah.
Yeah, because if one gets a hole, you always got a mate. So anyway, that's how we do it at our house. And they don't put up a tree no more, though, you know, because they, as a family, they don't celebrate with the rest of the family. There's a family feud going on, so, but... Carol loves to get some for her grandkids, and she'll sneak it to them. Eventually, they get it, you know. So, anyway, that's how I've done it.
Yeah, all the gift-giving stories, I'm sure they're wondering about. Anybody else on the gift-giving? So, how do you respond, then, if someone says, would you be involved in a Secret Santa, whether it's at work or at school or wherever? Ooh, Nancy Reagan time. Just say no. Just say no. That's what I did this past week. Yes, Merlin?
Well, we've had that occur in places that I've worked, but I've worked in nursing homes. And so I made a suggestion, how about calling it a secret admirer of press instead? And that worked a lot better, because then you can give them all year long and lay things on their beds, you know, just not for Christmas. But you get something for them, you know, because they're going to celebrate it, no matter how you look at it. That was the easiest way to get for these elderly people who didn't have family or anything. They was very happy, and once a year we told them who we was in January. So they always had gifts on their beds for special occasions that they didn't know.
Okay.
And they liked that.
Thank you, Merlin. Number six, what do you do when a neighbor child comes to you and says, "Now this is the kid next door. Your son, Johnny, says there's no Santa Claus. Tell me, is there?" How do you explain it to the neighbor kid?
I don't. I tell them to go talk to their parents.
Ah. Is that a good way, Mike? You're staying out of that one, huh? Any blowback? Anybody ever experienced doing this one?
And when we were children, my parents were not in the church, but they didn't keep Christmas, and they did not believe in lying to us, so they never told us there was a Santa Claus. And my brother told the neighbor there was no Santa Claus, so of course he came, brought him back to my father and said, "Is there a Santa Claus?" And my father said, "No, there's not," or something. And the neighbor woman was so mad at him. I mean, it was just so, I guess the best thing to do is to say, ask your parent.
So now the final one, how do you respond if someone actually asks you, "Why don't you keep Christmas?"
I choose to celebrate the holy days listed in the Bible instead of the secular holidays.
Ooh, that's all fit in one sentence. I like that. Anybody else have a response? Yes, Kathy.
I have had to deal with that many times working in the corporate world, and what I usually tell them is that I'm an extremely fundamental Christian. If it's not in the Bible, I don't do it.
I use the term, I do what the apostles do, and they didn't do it. Oh, you know, who's going to fight the apostles? You know, I haven't had any arguments about that. It pretty well closes it down. Any other comments, Mr. Fitz? hang on. Here we go.
Well, number five, you could tell them, "I haven't had a background check. I'm not cleared for secret yet."
Our resident military retiree with clearance. Anybody else want to contribute to why you don't keep Christmas? Go ahead.
My dentist receptionist asked me that one time, and so I just told her that the apostles didn't observe it, and that my church observes, and that I observe what the New Testament church did. And so she said, "Oh, well, that seems like that should be the right thing to do."
Oh, wow. So, yeah. Any last comments?
I sometimes say that I used to celebrate Christmas. And I started checking into where it came from, and I saw that it came from a lot of pagan roots, and I didn't want to celebrate it. And I want to celebrate the holy days that the New Testament church did.
Very good. Gives pause for their thinking. One more comment.
We talk about not wanting to offend anybody. And back several years ago, I stayed about 7 months with my daughter and her husband. And I came home one day, and my son-in-law was trying to push his Christmas tree up the stairs to go up steps to their room. And we told him, "You know, this is your house. You can do whatever you want to." He says, "Yeah, but we didn't want to offend you." I thought that was pretty good.
Taking it out of the way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate your contributions today. We can examine this Christmas season response potential, and I will leave the binder with all of the articles if you want to peruse through it. And if you want copies of anything, just let me know or hand me that slip, and I'll be happy to make copies for you of those if you can't download them online. I'd be happy to do that, and I'll just set this right back on the information table.